Early in the last century, people of color were banned from living in certain parts of Seattle. The laws have changed, but remnants of this racial divide exist to this day. This prompted a listener's question for KUOW's Local Wonder.
This is David Newman. I live in Beacon Hill in Seattle. And my question is, why is Seattle so racially segregated?
To answer David's question, we sent out KUOW's Jamala Henderson.
In order to understand why Seattle seems or feels so racially segregated today, you need a glimpse at the city's past. It's a particular part of its history that people don't exactly enjoy talking about. Seattle is sunny and warm the day I meet up with University of Washington history professor Jim Gregory. We stand on the edge of East Montlake Park, where I can see boaters and their yachts motoring under the drawbridge and through the cut. It's truly one of the most beautiful areas of Seattle. But according to Dr. Gregory, it also represents the city's ugly history of racial segregation.
The Ship Canal is a profound barrier between North Seattle and the rest of Seattle, but also between white Seattle and multiracial Seattle.
He says the physical barrier has actually served as a moat.
A literal moat that has defended, in a symbolic sense, white Seattle from desegregation.
That's because to the north, neighborhoods were very white, and blacks and Asians were pushed to live south of the Ship Canal. In the early 20th century, it was legal for white people to ban blacks and Asians from buying houses in certain neighborhoods. White neighborhood groups and realtors did this by inserting what they called racial restrictive covenants into property deeds.
So other neighbors could sue a homeowner who decided to sell to a person of color, or in many cases, Jews were also prohibited in neighborhoods.
Adrian Bailey remembers what that time was like for people of color. She's 62 and has been an activist and used to work for Seattle Central College. As a child, she was given access to many parts of Seattle that her friends could never see.
My mom was a domestic, so that meant we had to go where white folks were. And me being the youngest, a lot of times I always had to go with her. So I always saw what the other world was.
But later in life, she learned about the barriers she and others had to endure. For instance, Bailey knew by word of mouth which realtors would and would not rent to people of color. And when it came to buying a house,
black people always had to use shields to buy a house.
What do you mean by shields?
White people. If you were going to buy a house, it would have to be the white person would have to be the one to sign off on it first. And then that person would turn around and sell it to you. You know, it was common practice.
Those common practices meant blacks in Seattle were pushed to live in specific parts of the city. And blacks and people of color were also deprived of access to loans and mortgages, a discriminatory practice known as redlining. Today, things are different. Because of steep housing prices, African Americans are being pushed out of the very neighborhoods they were originally forced into. And many have moved further south into areas like the Rainier Valley, Renton, and Kent. In the 70s, at its peak, the Central District was home to about 70% of the city's black population. Today, it's majority white. But there are those with deep family roots in the Central District who are doing their best to hang on to their homes however they can.
My grandfather purchased his first house here in the Central District in 1947.
Ine Wokoma is a photographer and a longtime resident of Seattle's central area. His grandfather and eventually other members of his family bought more houses in the area and lived in them for decades, including the house he lives in now.
My aunt died here. My great aunt died in the house next door. My great uncle died in the house across the street. Having property meant that family always had a place to stay. Meant that you always had people around you who were a part of who you are.
But over the years, financial problems hit Wokoma's family members, and many of them had to sell their homes and move. At their height, members of his family owned and lived in about 10 houses in the central area. Today, they have 3. For Wokoma, living in his grandfather's house gives him a sense of continuity of his family, from the past to the present and even to the future.
50, 75, 100 years in the future. Will there be a place that my grandchildren and great-grandchildren can stand in and know that generations of their families live their lives in that space.
What we see today as racial segregation in Seattle is the legacy of discrimination from the city's past. Seattle does have more areas now that are more integrated than before. But James Gregory says there are still a lot of complicated pieces of segregation that live on in Seattle beneath the surface.
Segregation tends to reinforce itself, tends to perpetuate itself. There are a lot of processes involved. Some involve overt discrimination and subtle forms of discrimination. And then there are also just aversions and attractions that go on.
In other words, there are still people who feel more comfortable living near other people who look like them. I'm Jamala Henderson for KUOW's Local Wonder.
This story was inspired by a question from listener David Newman. You can hear more stories from our Local Wonder series at our website, kuow.org. And while you're there, leave us your local wonder about the Puget Sound region. If your question is selected, a KUOW reporter will investigate it.